Hi folks, bit of a different show for you today. I'm here in Houston, Texas. I'm actually visiting Jason Brashears from Archaics. Now we've been checking things out and discussing a few things about history, and very interesting sort of a character. So I thought while I was here, rather than bring you one of the normal shows that I've been doing lately, which has been mainly gathering news and letting you know what's going on with the smart grid and the whole COVID scam and all that sort of stuff, I thought I'd get back onto ancient history a little bit, just for at least one show, just to sort of bring you some information that I think is pretty amazing. I was here for a few days. We come did a bit of a conference. It was live streamed. I think you'll probably find it on YouTube. I'll put a link to it below if you want to go and check it out. It's about 7.5 hours, I think. And the audio is not that good, but there was some information that was covered in that little conference and that little presentation, which is quite an incredible discovery. And I want to talk to you about all of that now with Jason. So we're just going to go into the house here. Pretty amazing stuff, folks. Like, and something that is so amazing, but so obvious at the same time. Once you see it, it's one of those things. Once you see it, you can't really unsee it. But yeah, different sort of a show for you, folks. I just thought it was time to get onto another topic for a little while. This is Jason's place. Nice little place he's got here. Staying with a lovely lady here as well. She's not here at the moment, but that's the way it is. And it's a good place. It's a very comfy little place. So this is where I've been staying, which has been pretty cool. But what Jason, also Martin Leakey was here from Flat Earth British. He was staying here for a few days as well. So he was there for the conference, and it was a discovery that was sort of basically made by Martin and Jason when they were looking at the Great Wall of China and what's really going on with the Great Wall of China. And I'm just going to Jason's office here. There he is. He's the man himself.
Hey.
And we're going to discuss a few things about the Great Wall of China and a little bit of a perspective that maybe people haven't seen before. Check out this book collection, folks. It's not bad, eh? This is just the small one, isn't it? You've got another bigger one at your other place.
Yes, I got another one on my other studio.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, we're going to talk about the Great Wall of China, and we're going to show you some stuff that, like I said, it's pretty amazing and it's pretty obvious. Once you see it, you sort of can't unsee it, and it's amazing that no one has sort of noticed all of this sort of stuff before. But yeah, it's what we're going to do. So what do you reckon, Jason?
I think we're ready to do this.
So here with Jason Brashears discussing the myths around the construction of the Great Wall of China. And this is an interesting looking book that you've got here, Jason. Tell us about this book.
Well, I just wanted to show you that the narrative for the Great Wall of China was already well set over a century ago. They had already determined that they were going to tell us that a 5,000 mile long construction, 40 foot high, sometimes 20 foot high, with 25,000 castles called towers, was built in a 10-year period by a Chinese emperor who happened to also burn all the records and historical libraries, all the books, scrolls, and kill the scribes. He basically erased his entire history. This is the narrative.
That one's it's kind of ludicrous when you think about it. Like, you build this, it's essentially a 5,000-mile-long castle.
Yes, it is.
With towers, guard towers, which are function as all sorts of things. I mean, not just guard towers. Like, these are multi-story. They've got basement sections. They've got high sections. They've got storerooms. They've got rooms. They've probably got accommodation. Right. There's so many things about the wall. I mean, we've often looked at it and said, well, this obviously isn't what they're telling us, but what exactly is it? You know, and we're told that it was a wall that was built for defense. So even when people have been looking at it, they've been going, well, even if it wasn't built by the Chinese, and it was probably built by the Tartarians as a Tartarian defense wall, or by the Mongols or whatever, but there's no record of it ever actually being used in any battles at all, is there?
Absolutely not. And we can even start with these maps to get a real good understanding of what's going on here.
Yeah.
Because you're right. People have thrown Tartarians in. They've thrown different civilizations. The Chinese. It actually puts itself together when we start analyzing all the independent facts. Because the establishment has basically hidden what this thing is. However, all the clues to what it really is and its true function are easily found.
Yeah, it's like I said before, it's something that's so obvious that it's amazing no one's said it before. And this is the result of just Jason and Martin sitting here one day just throwing stuff around about what's going on with this wall. You know, and then Jason started asking questions about measurements and things. And so we're going to get into some of that now. So what's the basics? And interesting as well, when you look at the maps, of course, of certain things that happened in the area. You want to go through this?
Yeah, what you're seeing on the screen is the official why was the Great Wall of China built. This is the official deal. It's to resist Mongolian invasions. It's to resist. Now, you have to understand, here's the Celestial Empire. Here's the Chinese with their vast armies and all that, and they have to build this super construction to keep out some goat herders. It doesn't even make sense. What really doesn't make sense is, like Max said, there's no incidents in the recorded historical record where the Chinese ever had to even use the wall to defend themselves from the Mongols.
Yeah.
And that's profound.
And if they did use the wall to defend themselves against the Mongols, well, why was it built the way it was built? There's so much to this. So let's go through it. Let's have a look at this map of where the wall is. And what's another map that you've got there?
So we got a few maps to look at. These are provided by Martin Leakey. Here's an old map right here that it basically shows the Great Wall. You have to blow it up. I can't do that right here. But this is an old map showing that the Great Wall is basically the Silk Road that was known in ancient times that trafficked India, Central Asia, the Middle East, even as far as Greece. Items from the Silk Road have been found in Greek tombs. All throughout Egypt, Silk Road items that have been traded and trafficked. And it shows the Silk Road maps are very clear. It's very clear. Even the oldest maps show these trade routes. But we're going to have to discuss something real quick. Because the Great Wall of China is supposed to be in China, right? Do you see this right here, Max? Old map?
Yeah, this is incredible. This is the what looks exactly like the Great Wall. I mean, it is the Great Wall.
It is the Great Wall. It's another piece of the Great Wall. But where is it at? I'm going to blow it up for you, Max.
Yeah, it's in the Caucasus.
Central Eurasia. It's in the Caucasus Mountains, identical to the Great Wall of China in the Caucasus Mountains. So this is an anomaly we're not going to discuss in this video, but we have to show that maybe this wasn't Chinese after all.
Well, that's the thing, it wasn't. And this is what happened when they were just discussing this, like just throwing measurements and things around and looking at, you know, how Chinese architecture is constructed, how Chinese bridges are constructed. Chinese have a particular way of building things.
Yes, they do.
And the stuff that people are attributing to Tartaria or whatever, what they're calling Greco-Roman style, this is a particular type of architecture. And when you look through the Great Wall of China, it's all Greek Roman style, and there's other giveaway signs as well.
Like there's this is gonna blow your mind. First of all, this is not a map of the Great Wall. What is this a map of?
The Silk Road.
This is the ancient, legendary Silk Road. The fact that the Silk Road map is actually showing something else. You see where it ends right here in Beijing, where it goes over here, mm-hmm. where there's a major stop here in Shanghai?
Yeah.
You see this route of the Silk Road? Let's go back and look at this map.
Yeah.
Of the Great Wall.
Yeah.
The Great Wall and the Silk Road overlap, but they don't show them in the same map together. But they overlap. But the actual crux of the issue is where the Great Wall ends.
Yeah, it's a dock. It's a dock. I mean, that's a dock, folks.
Yes, it is. You can imagine at one time it had like wooden piers that went out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
ships docked on it. It probably went out a good distance.
Absolutely.
But just like any quay or wharf, it's going to have to be founded in stone at the end. But the rest of it would have been wood. And thousands of years ago, it's gone. It's gone.
And go back to that previous shot before as well. That down here, you look where the road's going, you know? No, the other one, like the Caucasus.
Oh, yeah, the Caucasus map, right here.
No, but it shows you, you go back to that other map of the Silk Road.
Silk Road map,
like
yeah.
this one, right? You've got all this here. If the Silk Road is actually the Great Wall of China, would it explain why those constructions are there?
What's there? Do you see where the Silk Road ends in right off of Shanghai? Mm. Do you see where that red tail goes to the ocean, mm-hmm. right there? Hmm. Okay, that is this picture here.
Yeah.
That is where the wall. That's outside of Shanghai. That is where it goes straight into the water. This is the Yellow Sea. Hmm. This would have given access to all merchant guilds, shipping guilds, all on the Japanese, Chinese coast, all of Indonesia, even as far as Australia. All the shipping in that area of the world could have come into that bay right there and unloaded their goods and sent them up the Silk Road.
Absolutely, they could have received goods as well. And also, when you look at the one, there's so much stuff to confirm that this is what was going on. What really made you sort of look at this was the measurements and the...
Absolutely. The imagination that the official narrative was that this was a defensive wall against the Mongols, because defensive architecture in the ancient world would reflect that if that was true, but that's not what we find here. Let's look at this picture here. Do you see the double crenellations on the wall back here?
Yeah.
See where they were removed right here in the forefront? The double crenellations are removed in the forefront, but they continue here, and they're between this tower, and they go all the way up the mountain. It's double crenellations. These are battlements put on both sides. If you're building a super construction to repel an invasion, you would never, as a military engineer, give your enemy a defensible position if he takes your construction.
Right? Exactly.
You would never do that. But this is exactly what we see. Crenellations, battlements on both sides of an elevated road. Hmm. This thing's 20, at the lowest point, the Great Wall of China is 20 feet off the ground, which is still high. But the average is 27 feet across 5,000 miles of construction. But it gets as high as 40 feet. Something else was going on here. This was not to repel invasion, because walls to repel invasion would not be hollow. Did you know that there's chambers and tunnels underneath these roads?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's like a castle that's 5,000 miles long, and all of the roads and like the width of the roads, like you look at the width of Roman roads.
Look at this, right? Here's a perfect picture right here. Guys, when Martin and I were looking at this, we had to go into the measurements, and we found something profound. The width of the Great Wall of China, depending upon the topography and what it had to narrow ravines it went through and all that, it is 13 to 16 feet in width, which is not a uniform unit of Chinese measurement for their own roads, but it is for Rome. Rome had standardized many things, such as bridge building, aqueducts, canal works, Building foundations and roads are all standardized throughout the entire Roman provincial territories and Roman Empire. And what we find here is that the Great Wall of China is the exact width of a Roman road. Now, this is double crenellations again you see here. Mm-hmm. And again, going through a forest, look at the battlements. Mm. Look at the battlements.
Yeah, made to defend yourself from marauders on each side of the road.
On each side. They must have had to defend, whoever was using the road had to defend against the Chinese and the Mongols.
Yeah, exactly. And you got 25,000 of these towers along the way. And they're all at divisions, placement, they're all equally placed.
Yep.
And again, it's a Roman measurement.
Absolutely. The distance between these 25,000 towers is uniform. It all depends on the geography. Sometimes they're a few feet off because of where they had to build. But the mean distance between 25,000 is between 25,000 constructions that we call towers, which are actually miniature castles. It is 5,430 feet. And it's no coincidence, guys. That is not a Chinese unit of measurement, but it is Roman. It's called 5,000 pedes. It's exactly where you pede, where you get pedestrian, like walker, where you get pedestal. But pedes, 5,000 pedes, 5,000 Roman feet is a mile. That's the distance between these constructions. And 5,000 pedes is 5,430 standard British feet that we use today. And that's not a coincidence. Look at this. More. Look at that beautiful picture. They're defending on both sides.
Mm. Yeah, it's a trade route.
Look at this old illustration.
Mm.
Same thing. Look at the battlements.
Mm.
The reason I'm being so detail specific with you is because there are tourists today. Like, I got emails after the first presentation of tourists that say, "Hey, Jason, you're really on to something. Let me tell you what they're doing." The areas that have the double battlements are not the tourist sites.
Mm.
They take you to areas where one side's been sheared down. They have taken the masonry out. Mm. And you're not allowed to travel the whole Great Wall. They have tourist areas where you're allowed to go to, and they're very carefully doctored. They even put Chinese pagodas on top of some of the towers.
Yeah.
They did that. Yeah, it's crazy. But these old illustrations, they tell a story. Look at that. That's the Great Wall as it was found like 200 years ago. And it's got battlements on both sides, which it's not supposed to have. If it was built to defend against nomads, goat herders, invasions from Mongols, then it would only have crenellations on one side. Mm. So if the wall got overran, the construction could not be used as a defense against the ones that lost it.
Mm.
So that's crazy.
And there's also, it's everywhere. And the bridges and aqueducts as well. When it crosses rivers, you look at the type of bridges and the type of archways it's using as it crosses these rivers.
We'll get to that in a minute. But real quick, before we go into that type of architecture, I want you to notice something. Do you see anything unusual about this gate? Because I'm going to blow it up for you. Do you see the different building methods and different constructions.
Two different construction periods. So how was it built by one guy over 10 years?
It wasn't. This was a much older structure before the Chinese added to it. Or someone else did. But what you're looking at, see the size of that guy? And he's even closer than the wall behind him. What you're looking at is cut and dressed Heliolithic blocks. This is standard for the 18th to 15th century BC. This is the standard building materials they built with gigantic blocks. And this original construction is still partly here, but those are granite blocks. The rest of the wall is kiln-fired clay brick, all this. And it was built by, and it was all, this is an added construction, and we're going to go into that because the Chinese aren't the one that added all this to a much more ancient construction. Somebody had already built a road here in very ancient times, and then somebody else came, and the Chinese got the credit for it. And they do partially get the credit, and we'll explain why the Chinese did build the wall but they didn't design it. Someone else did. But yes, this is a two different types of construction, and you see that all throughout. Everywhere where the Great Wall stops, you see this megalithic architecture, gigantic blocks that are employed. It's an older civilization. Mm-hmm. It's not 220 BC that when the Chinese were said to have built this, and 200 BC when it is said that the Chinese made first contact with Rome. So this is in the official narrative. First contact between East and West was 200 BC. So it fits the narrative, though, that the Great Wall was built in 220 BC, but the narrative is giving the credit for somebody for where it's not due.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting, like looking at pictures like this, like that's obviously a much, much older civilization. Mm-hmm. They've simply built a pagoda on top.
They put a Chinese pagoda on it.
And, yeah. And the Chinese built a lot of stuff with wood and paper and stuff like that. They built megalithic stone stuff like this. And it's like you say, it's like we've got cultures that are layered and pancaked on top of each other, going back millennia. It's remarkable. Yes, just how much is buried.
You can imagine the superstructure that was on top of this at one time.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, earthquakes, disasters, invasion, and the Chinese have this genetic, it's like a synaptic fail-safe. It seems that when their civilization is blooming and burgeoning and everything's going right, all of a sudden they get an emperor who just erases their history, destroys all their books, kills all their priests, all their scribes, and it sends them into some cultural reset for centuries. The Chinese have done this over and over and over. And different Chinese people have exhibited a genius like Confucius, but the rest of the Chinese culture never seems to take it on. And the genius just lives for a while or is regarded as an anomaly, and Chinese culture maintains. It's some genetic failsafe that basically retards development. The Chinese always ascend, and then they tear themselves down. This is something I've noticed in my own studies over and over. But here's another gate, and it shows you the different levels of construction. See where all the older blocks?
Mm-hmm.
These are older blocks. Just different periods of construction. Even the battlements were done in red brick.
Yeah.
Now I don't know if you're familiar with a lot of the Tartaria research. Martin Leakey has this. Old world structures around the world that have been rebuilt, they've been rebuilt with this odd red brick on all the continents. It's the same. And what's crazy is no one knows where they're getting this red material to make this red brick. There's been theories. Listen, this might be gross, but there's theories that it's genocides and there's blood mixed in the clay. There's also the Phoenix phenomenon hypothesis, where every 138 years, as I have documented throughout 58 centuries, we have these massive storms of red dust, red mud, and red rain according to the relative humidity in whatever geography it's happening. But we have red brick all over. Even here in Texas, we have old buildings that were rebuilt with red brick.
Hmm. Maybe they get it from Australia. You ought to see the sand in Australia. It's so red in the desert. I've often speculated, and other people have speculated, where it comes from, why there's so much iron in the sand.
So these are just old pictures of the Great Wall before the Chinese came and doctored it up and put pagodas on them and all that. And, I mean, you can see that.
It's Roman. It's so Roman when you look at it. And it's so obviously a trade route when you really look at it.
That's what it is.
I think, what would it be for?
It is an elevated road.
There's no record of any war being fought or defended against. And if you were doing it for defensive purpose, why would you have all these chambers below the wall? Why would the wall be hollow? And there are entrances from both sides as well.
That's right. That's right. It's a... What we're presenting here is that this is not the Great Wall of China. It's actually what?
It's the Great Silk Road of Rome.
That's what it is. And what you're looking at in this...
Even if China was in... Perhaps there was a great trade empire that happened between Rome and China. I mean, obviously there was. There was a lot of stuff going between them.
Yes, there was.
Whoever was ultimately responsible, it's definitely Roman design. And there's no way that it was built as a defensive wall to keep Mongols out. There's pictures you've got, I'm sure we'll get to later, that show areas of the wall where there's like exits to what used to be cities or villages.
Oh yeah, there's communities there. Some were there to provide maybe these five towers here, which are all a mile apart, water. Other ones provide food. Other ones provide livestock. I mean, we're talking about the Amazon of the ancient world, and we're going to get to that. But we're talking about the Great Wall wasn't so just some guys carrying merchandise from Rome to China and from China to Rome and to Silk Road in India. We're talking about a full-fledged operation of the moving of merchandise that is already packaged up, and it is sent down the wall to the empires and countries that it's that are to receive it. And it's no different than modern history in the 1800s.
It's like a department store franchise. The whole thing, like you think about it, you've got these towers. The towers are full of goods, stocked with whatever the local town uses the most is all stocked there in the tower. And this is a continuous flow from both directions, regulated by a Roman mile between each one. Right. So perhaps you'd go even five towers per day. You'd have hotel sections in there where you can stay because you wouldn't be staying on the wall.
That's right.
You'd have accommodation, you'd have brothels, you'd have storehouses, you'd have everything all along the wall. And they'd be supplying them, constantly supplying these different towers. So if you wanted something from one end of the wall, you wouldn't have to wait for it to travel 5,000 miles.
It's already been en route.
It's already there, it's already en route, because we know what you need. And even with these like you say, these ramps that are going off that are like exits to other towns, it's a trade route. It's obviously a trade route.
Well, I'm going to show pictures of what he just described. But this right here, these are Roman arches. These are inside the constructions, the towers. And what's really interesting is the towers themselves are not uniform. They have like five basic patterns. Some of them look like they're designed to house people. People just hotels. Some of them merchandise. Some of them look like they may have been food courts, where locals could come in and sell their fruit and their vegetables and all that. Some of them definitely look like garrisons, but they're far and few between. So these are Roman arches. These are Roman arches. Look how much open space is in here.
Yeah.
70, 80 people could come in here and deal. Because I'm going to tell you now, if we're right and merchandise was being moved thousands of miles rapidly toward Rome, then not only Rome, but for distribution throughout the Near East and the Middle East, then I promise you, at nighttime when the sun went down, they locked that road down, or they wouldn't have battlements on both sides. They didn't fear armies. They feared pirates, marauders, bandits.
Yeah,
they thought they feared thieves, and they had a good reason to fear it. That's why they had the battlements on both sides. But they would lock down every night. Everybody would be in their respective towers. The road would be probably patrolled, one or two soldiers per mile, and deal. It'd be very efficient, but they had to do this. It was worth it to Rome to do the Silk Road as a fortification, because we have done the research, and the exchange of goods is fantastic. Do you have that list of the exchange of goods, of what Rome was receiving from China?
Somewhere. I'd have to find it. Where are we?
Let's see. There's a list in here somewhere. Yeah, it's a lot. We got a lot of data here, guys, on this, but But the past is a predicate for the future in the collective, guys. Let me explain. In the 1800s, the exact same scenario unfolded. American engineers designed a transport system. You guys know of it as Union Pacific. You know of it as the railway system and all that. But who built it? Who built the American railroad system? Yeah. It was designed by Americans, but Americans didn't build it. Who did?
Yeah, the Chinese. The Irish, Chinese. Whatever.
They called them coolies. The Chinese built it. It's the same scenario. Roman engineers went in, and when they took over the Silk Road, when Rome finally took the Silk Road, they went in and fortified it, and they used the Chinese to do it. And they used Chinese laborers, probably donated from the Chinese emperor, because he saw. Because we found out, doing a simple Google search, we found out that at 2,000 years ago, especially during the reign of like Marcus Aurelius, hundreds of tons of gold was being sent from Rome to China. There's no other way to send that but up this route here.
Which could explain why it was so well fortified. I mean, they got a lot of silk back from China as well. But it just makes perfect sense.
They got jade, ivory, silk, spices.
Maybe it was an originally like a route that was used by camel trailers or whatever, but I mean, I don't know. There's places there that you probably wouldn't travel.
Yeah,
I mean, it goes over all types of terrain as well.
Well, the Chinese are known for not only the rickshaw, which is a small, narrow cart that can hold a lot of weight.
Pagoda on top.
Yeah, but see the red. See, you see the brick. How the brick is very different than the rest.
They've added.
It's obviously added. Yeah. So the Chinese though have perfected the backpack. Have you ever seen the Chinese with these giant backpacks that go 2 and 3 feet above their heads?
Yeah.
And they got it all perfectly balanced, and it's got even got shoulder supports. The Chinese have learned to carry a lot of weight per man. And you can imagine if each team of merchandisers is, you have Chinese coolies that are, each one of them's got a backpack and a forward pack. They don't have to carry their own food and water. It's all provided on the way. Yeah. Every bit of it. There's all, you don't, travelers and merchants didn't have to carry it because the wall is about rapid transport. And that's what was going on. And you might have 50 Chinese in a train. They're all assigned to the same group. They got one team leader, and they're assigned 10 towers a day. That's 10 miles a day they're moving merchandise. But if you've got 500 of these little 50-man teams steadily moving merchandise, then that means that a courtesan in Rome can order something in the very next day, get it from a Roman warehouse.
Mm, exactly.
Just like that.
On the next tower, you've got the same thing. The goods are being constantly moved down the wall. So it's
fascinating.
Yeah, it is.
It's fascinating. Here's some old illustration of part of the Great Wall. Now, if you notice, what do you notice about the Chinese constructions in this one image?
Yeah, exactly.
What do you notice?
Not like the wall.
They're not even a part of the wall. Look, they're further back.
Yeah.
But look at the wall. That's not Chinese.
No.
Here's a very old illustration of the wall, and it shows the wall separate from Chinese constructions.
Yeah.
It's just a really, really good picture. Again, very old picture of the wall. Another old picture of the wall. Correlations are gone on one side.
Exactly.
Okay. Here's what you were talking about, Roman aqueducts and bridges.
Yeah.
These are Roman arches. These are not Chinese constructions.
No.
Definitely not. The Romans built for utility. They were utilitarians. Unless it's in Rome or somewhere imperial palace where aesthetics were wanted, when it was strictly utility and they didn't care about anything else, the Romans were very austere. Their constructions were built to last, and they were built just for that function with no artwork whatsoever.
Yeah.
Chinese are not like that. I'm going to show pictures of what Chinese bridges look like. This is part of the Great Wall too. That's all part of the Great Wall.
Yeah, it's Roman aqueducts.
Roman aqueducts. It looks identical to aqueducts all throughout Europe.
Exactly.
So here we go to Great Wall of China. Here it is again, over another river. Now, I'm going to blow your mind. Max, look at this Chinese bridge.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing like what you would see. And they built all their bridges like different depending on where they were. They put a lot of aesthetics into it.
Yeah, of course. Their culture shines through artistically in their architecture. But there's another clue here, because I'm going to show you another bridge. Look at this bridge.
Mm.
Chinese boat, Chinese bridge. I'm going to see if you notice what I'm talking about. This bridge compared to the other bridge, now compared to this third Chinese bridge.
Mm.
Now we're going to look at a fourth Chinese bridge. What do you notice about all four bridges?
Well, they're all different, and they're all
Chinese do not have uniform, like exactly. The Romans did.
Exactly.
They do not have a uniform engineering science for bridge building.
They're built aesthetically depending on their surroundings, what's going to fit in aesthetically.
Which is what? Feng Shui.
Feng Shui, yeah, exactly.
Chinese build according to the topography. The Great Wall didn't give a damn about that austere construction went through everything. It was very unbeautiful. It was something the Chinese would never do. The Chinese built their constructions to blend into the environment. It's called Feng Shui. It's what they would have done. The Great Wall is an eyesore. The way it just zigzags and goes up and down. It's just an eyesore.
And it's uniform the whole way. Uniform battlements, uniform size, uniform tower placement, uniform towers.
Yep.
They're from the outside.
So let's look.
It's very functional.
Look at this picture here. This is Chinese architecture. This is Chinese art. This is architectural aesthetics.
Yeah.
There's nothing like that on the Great Wall. Nothing. Again, Roman arches. This is just a tower, one of the towers. Look how many people could be in these. And it's multiple levels and it goes underground.
Yeah.
And they have roofs. I mean, a 50-man team could easily, with all their packs, could easily sleep in there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think, well, you could have had bunks. You could have had all sorts of stuff. You could have had little hotel sections.
The fact that you mentioned hotels is amazing. He's in sync not only with me but with the presentation because he has no idea what I'm about to show. But this is a modern-day hotel in China, but it's a tower in the Great Wall.
Well, there you go.
Right there. This is the Great Wall of China turned into a hotel. Right here. Look at that.
Yeah.
You have to pay a hotel to go to these luxury like rooms that are built out of the towers of the Great Wall of China. It's amazing. Look at this.
Yeah.
So remember, guys, it's a fundamental tenet. Now I know this is Crow House production here on this channel, but on our KX channel, it's a fundamental tenet. If anything can be shown to be true somewhere, it's probably true elsewhere as well. And this is what we're finding. If they're showing hotels right now in the Great Wall, then it's probably a direct reflection of ancient times when they were used to house people as well.
Exactly. You know, it's a good guy. Roman arches all through there. You know?
Yeah, it's Roman arches everywhere. Now, this is a guy on a bicycle because it conveys the idea of this is a conveyance, not a wall.
Hmm.
This is a conveyance. This was for travel. Not for defense. Not for defense against armies. It was for safe travel and defense against small groups who thought they could take some Roman gold or Roman merchandise.
Yeah.
So here it is again. Look at the beautiful Roman architecture.
Hmm.
This is all inside the towers.
And you could have tables of vendors in there, or you could turn that into a hotel.
Yeah.
For the night, you could have minstrels.
Yeah, it's multiple floors though, but you're right, outside these little small access doors are at the bottom of the towers. Sometimes they're on one side, sometimes they're on both sides, but the beauty of it is a community of vendors from local villages could sell their stuff to people moving back and forth because they did not need food and water.
Yeah, you can easily stop along the way on the wall, go down here and get some lunch from a vendor or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, every bit of this would have been, this is the Amazon of the ancient world. Yeah. And it would have been just as efficient as today.
Like an Amazon / shopping mall that goes for 5,000 miles.
Absolutely.
Shopping mall / hotel complex.
So before we move on forward, I want to address one thing. The Romans, if the Romans built the Great Wall of China, it is not outside their area of expertise. Because anybody who even knows a modicum of history knows that the Romans built a gigantic wall with battlements only on one side, way away from Rome in Britain. It's called Hadrian's Wall. And they don't have battlements on both sides, only on the side of the enemy. Because the Romans spread their empire all the way to the north of England when they came up with some severe resistance. You want to tell them about that?
Yeah, the Picts. They just met the Picts in Scotland and just went, we're not even going to mess with these guys. So they just built a wall from one coast to the other to just keep them back. And the Picts are giant Scots with their red hair and their blue paint. And
that's right.
Fighting butt naked, like you were saying.
Hell yeah! I mean, imagine you're a Roman soldier. Your average height is 5'2". The Romans were a small people, but they had mastered the Greek phalanx and turned it into the Roman legion. And they didn't fear anybody. They had superior technology in armor and weapons, but they were a very small people. But you can imagine, like you said, you're dealing with 6'5" butt naked guys who have painted their skin blue and got yellow war paint on and were using giant battle axes and war axes and spears, and their hair's all wild, and they sing while they fight, called the Picts. They said, you know what, we're not going to fight these fuckers. We're going to build a wall. So they built the wall. It's called Hadrian's Wall. And the reason I'm mentioning Hadrian's Wall, because if anything's true somewhere, it's probably true somewhere else. If the Romans could build a wall hundreds of miles long in Britain and at great height in some places, and you can walk on it, the Romans, you can walk on top of the, all the way down the length of Hadrian's Wall. But the significant difference,
battlements on one side.
The battlements only face the enemy. So I just wanted to mention that before we go into this.
I think it's interesting, too, looking at the Picts and the red hair and the whole thing when we start looking at history and the fact that they found so many red-haired people. Like,
open up a can of worms with that one. Chinese Taklan Mackin Desert, Chinese archaeologists actually found Caucasian, red-haired, red-bearded mummies under the sand.
This is what I don't tell you about the Chinese pyramids and stuff, because when they start looking at all the Chinese pyramids,
they weren't built by the Chinese.
All related to these really tall, red-headed people. The same that have been reported to be found in the tombs in the Grand Canyon.
Inca mummies.
The Inca
aristocracy was all red-headed.
All over the place. Like, if there was an ancient culture that existed, which I'm pretty sure there was, and a lot of us are sure there was, that a lot of people euphemistically refer to as Tartaria, which is simply a body of land that was once in Europe. But there's similar architecture that exists all over the earth, which indicates that there was a similar culture that existed all over the earth. And whatever that was, there's definitely some connection with these very tall, red-headed people who seem to be found wherever these pyramids and architecture is found. It's very interesting. And then you look at the Picts, you know, the Hadrian's Wall, just keep them back. Who knows
what the connection is? Yeah, there very well could be. I mean, I don't believe in coincidences, but I want to show this picture. This is ancient Baalbek, and it's important to understand. Like I said, if something is true somewhere, it's probably true elsewhere as well. This is Baalbek. And what's fascinating about it is the Romans built temples on top of Baalbek, but Baalbek is a much older construction. This is interesting because Baalbek, these are Roman temples on top of a much more ancient Heliolithic, giant megalithic blocks. So big, and remember, the dating for that is 18th to 15th century BC for Heliolithic architecture. Now, this is all Roman constructions on top of Baalbek, but that's the original Trilithon. Mm. Do you see the difference in the blocks?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
The Romans didn't build that, nor did they claim to. They claimed to have built over the top.
Exactly.
And they built temples on it.
These are the biggest cut stones ever found in existence at Trilithon. They can only estimate the weight around about 100 tons or something.
It's crazy.
But they put 26 feet high in a wall. And there's still one of them called the Stone of the Pregnant Woman, which is found in a quarry.
It's still in the quarry. It's miles away.
And there's no trace of any road that they would have used to transport these things there. The most amazing stone blocks in the world.
We have Roman pillars here at Baalbek. Just showing you.
That's a guy standing there at the end of the wall there.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even see him.
That's a man standing there. These are 26 feet high in the wall, stones. And there's three of them put together.
It's amazing.
It's absolutely incredible.
It's amazing. So this is all Roman artwork at Petra. This is Petra now. The reason we're mentioning Petra is in Jordan. It is a 5,000-year-old underground series of facilities. It's what it was. It was used for storage, grain storage. It protects against the weather. It held humidity. Thousands of people live in Petra for thousands of years. The Romans took it over, and it's a part of the Silk Road. But all the architecture on the outside of this underground facility is Roman. The reason this is mentioned about Baalbek and Petra, that cat. The reason it's mentioned about these places is because this is what the Romans did. Mm. It's no different than the great road of Rome that's in China. Just because it's geographically located in China does not mean that it's Chinese. It means that the Romans went in there and built over a much older construction. Was that older construction of Heliolithic nature Chinese? It may have been, I don't know. But this presentation is about what Rome did.
Mm. And this is definitely Roman. And look at it, it's obviously a road.
It's 100% a road. 100%. Now, I'm showing this image right here. It's from a Disney movie. I'm showing this image here because this is a part of the collective establishment programming. There are subliminal messages in here that are very overt when you really look at them that basically get you to 100% believe that the wall is Chinese. Hmm. What is it?
You know, the pagoda and the shape of the slant and the...
Yep.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
The pagodas.
Yeah.
They're not on the Great Wall, but Disney put them there to program children to automatically believe in that narrative that the Chinese built this construction. Now, what Disney also does is little truth drops. Do you see the truth drop in here?
Yeah, with the battlements on both sides. But again, they lowered a little bit so they look more like their Armco railing for cars.
Yeah,
they
lowered a little bit, but there's a truth bomb right here in the middle of the picture.
What am I looking at?
This is a road for cars.
Well, yeah, true.
Like I said, it was it's so obvious, it's easy to miss. So there's a lot in this picture Disney is conveying. It's conveying that you need to believe that this is Chinese construction. But it's also telling you the truth. It's not a wall, it's a road. Cars only travel on roads. It's a beautiful way they did that. So, I'm thinking, right now, I'm not sure we covered everything. I want to look at this. I want to look at this because we need to make sure that everybody's got it.
I lost all track of the list.
Oh, man, it's okay.
Very involved in the conversation.
It's okay. Hey,
I hope the audio is all good too, folks. We hope the audio is good.
I'm going to do my best to amplify it. What you're looking at is a coin found in China from 330 AD. This is Constantine.
Yeah.
And it's not the only Roman artifact. As a matter of fact, I have a list here of things I want to read to you. This is stunning. This is astonishing because it takes our theory here and gives it relative context. Listen, guys. In 166 AD, under Marcus Aurelius, Romans traveled from the Persian Gulf to China, and this is in the historical record. So we can't say there's no Roman contact. Also, the establishment histories admit that first contact between China and the Mediterranean cultures was in 200 BC. When was the official narrative for the building of the wall?
Yeah, 200 BC.
200 BC, the Great Wall was being built. So, here's another fact. This is establishment history now. The Silk Road was opened for trade for everybody in 130 BC. This means that the Great Wall had been under construction for 90 years. Now, 90 years doesn't sound like a long time for a 5,000-mile-long construction, but it wasn't all done immediately. And if you had 200 work crews, and there was thousands of men per crew and just one or two Roman engineers in each group and the rest of them Roman provincial slaves who were master masons, as well as thousands of Chinese ancient coolies who were helping, then 200 construction sites would have expanded that wall rapidly till the individual sites would have been connected.
Absolutely. You would have done them all compartmentally.
90 years is a long time. And if you've got 200 work crews and each one's got thousands of laborers, you're going to get a lot done. So, I already told you about the spice and silks and porcelains, jade, the tea and all that. Another thing that we need to discuss is that the Romans were addicted at this time to opium. Martin and I did a search and we found out that opium was very popular in Rome. They used it for caesarean sections, and the Romans used it to keep people chemically dependent. This is a very interesting clue because the past can be a predicate for the future for the collective. You already understand what the British did to the Chinese. People think it was the other way around, that the Chinese had the opium. No, the opium was imported from India. The British got it from India, took it to China, and got the Chinese addicted to it, enslaved them. And this is how Hong Kong, and this is how the British maintained control through the East India Company. The shipping guilds controlled all of China. Just a few people controlled the whole of China because of the opium trade.
Pretty insidious history. when you look at it. But yeah. History is a lie agreed upon, brother, as this is shown. And this really should be sending tremors up the spines of the academics up there who've been pushing this line that this is a Great Wall of China was built for defensive purposes. Because, like, everything that Jason's been showing you here, I mean, it's obvious. And it's, like I said, it's so obvious, it's a wonder no one ever really looked at it before. The Great Wall of China is kind of an out there sort of a thing that's over on the side that you don't really put that much focus on. But now that you have...
We never had any reason to question it. It's in China.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? So, I mean, we just never had any reason to look at it. But I want to mention this. At Sichuan Province in China, Roman artifacts have been excavated by archaeologists. That again puts Romans in China. So we've already gone through the distance between being a Roman distance and the width of the road, and we've gone through all that. So Roman civic projects were always built by prisoners, slaves, and conscripts. Oh, in 1993, Chinese archaeologists found Roman architecture and Roman coins near Yongsheng in China. One of them was this Constantine coin.
Okay.
So that was in 1993. In 2016, archaeologists excavated at a Roman Britain site Chinese skeletons. What are Chinese skeletons doing in Roman-occupied Britain? It's almost as if a Roman slave owner probably had some coolies, you know what I mean? Probably had some Chinese, and he made it all the way, and they probably died in Britain or whatever, and they were buried there. And I mean, that's just amazing. It the reason I'm mentioning these things is because academia is against diffusionism. They don't like any evidence whatsoever of anything transcontinental in ancient times, anything going on. They're anti-diffusionist.
And this absolutely shows that, like, with that wharf at the end there in the LSC, I mean, this you could have had trade going anywhere and trade coming from anywhere.
They could have been going to the Americas.
Absolutely.
Yeah, trades could have been going to Central America, where Oaxaca State is, of the Olmecs, and they all look Chinese.
Yeah, it shows just how connected the ancient world was and just how much we've been lied to about everything, you know?
100%. The last artifact is 1922. Irish archaeologists were baffled when they found hundreds of Chinese seals. Seals were carried by Chinese merchants who stamped their merchandise and their letters. Hundreds of Chinese seals were found in Ireland in 1922. Don't know. It's an anomaly. Don't even talk about it. It's crazy. So there's two elements here that need to be discussed. One of them is the fact that, like you said earlier, it's absolutely obvious that when it comes to expertise in engineering, who is it, China or Rome?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's Rome, 100%. So when it comes to trade expansion, who is it?
Yeah, right.
Rome or China? It's Rome. The reason, China is isolationist, always has been. 5,000 years of history, they do not like incursions. They do not like anybody coming into their civilization, doing anything. They do not accept, as a matter of fact, most people don't know this, but in American history, American warships in the 1880s had to go to Japan and China and threaten to cannon their cities if they didn't exchange and trade with us. This is what we did in the United States, and it's in the historical record. And this is how we opened up, because they did not want to trade with the rest of the world. But America knew, the United States knew, that if the Chinese didn't engage and they maintained that isolationism, European powers were already rising. And it would be no time before a European power just invaded China and just took it. So to keep that from happening, the United States went over there and made them engage in international trade. So that's how isolationist they are. So yeah, Max, I think we're
pretty done.
I think this is the Amazon of the ancient world.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you really look at what they could have done, have you got any of those shots of where the wall branches off?
Oh yes.
You got some of them?
Yeah, I wanted
to see a couple of those shots, because like these are like exits off the highway, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know what? The best way to do that is like this. Let me go ahead and add them. So these are what you're talking about is They are literally like highways. There was even a video that showed where it branched out.
Yeah.
Look at these pictures here, where even old pictures showed that it was understood. Look at these old pictures. Look at that.
Yeah. There's areas where you've actually got to a tower, and right next to a tower, if this was a defensive wall and it was just there as a wall to keep people out of the country, why have you got pieces branching off and going down and to where there would have once been villages, even if there aren't villages there now? It's like exits off the main highway.
Absolutely.
And once you look at this stuff, like I said before, you can't unsee it. Once you really start looking at what the true function of this structure is, and how it's a 5,000 mile long castle, with it's a trade route, it's accommodation, it's storehouses, it's exits, it's a made highway going straight across.
Even the official narrative maps show the highway. How it branches off.
It's virtually like the largest highway ever built.
That's right.
It's going right across China and across into Europe. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it goes to all the major urban centers. They would have collected their merchandise and sent it up the road.
Branching out and going down through the Caucasus and down through everywhere.
That's it.
So, I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling what it actually was and what we've been told it was. And like I said, once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's so obvious that that's what it is and that's what it was used for. And culminating in that dock at the end there is incredible.
So, oh yeah, yeah. That's a good way to. That's the end of the wall, and it's really a good way to end the video.
It is. I mean, that's that in itself. That shows a major shipping port that would have been going in both directions. And imagine what it would have been like to have a huge section of just wooden quays built out there.
Oh yeah, there's no doubt. It's wooden docks. So it takes 18 months to walk the 5,000 miles of the Great Wall of China. But with 25,000 constructions, towers, that can all hold merchandise at any one time for over 1,000 years, this thing was just moving merchandise. Merchandise every day was passing through each tower, going to a tower destination. They lock down at night. Sun comes up, full mobility. Everybody's moving again. Sun goes down, locked down. It doesn't matter that it takes 18 months to get the merchandise to the end, because the merchandise never stops moving. So it's already sold by the time it arrives to Rome. And people can purchase and buy in real time their Chinese porcelains and their ointments and oils and eucalyptuses. They can get their spices. They can get bamboo. They can buy all the Chinese goods are steadily coming. Silks, I can't remember, little bonsai trees. Everything the Chinese wanted to sell is going up the road. But what's really interesting is the research unveiled Chinese didn't want anything from Rome but gold. That's all they wanted. That's again that isolationist mentality. They don't want anything cultural from anybody else. They just want gold.
Interesting stuff. So anyway, folks, thought you'd enjoy that conversation. So thanks for tuning in. And I'll get back to you soon. I'll be back in Mexico probably next week. And I'll get back to some more normal videos for you. But this is definitely something to think about. Please share with everybody that you know, because I think it's important. You know, it's important that we know where we came from. It might give us some idea of where we're going. Thanks for listening. And thanks for the chat, Jase.
Awesome, man. Awesome.
And for the hospitalities.
Yeah, man.
Very, very hospitable, man. It's been great staying here. And I'll have to do it again.
Oh, I'm all for it.